could ever, ever think that putting a pipeline under a river is a good idea? If you ask that question of a six-year-old, they'll say, that's a bad idea. Well, I don't understand why government cannot make the right decision in this case. It seems so simple.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Greta. And hello to you, the listener.
And we just heard the voice of Mary Sand, Ames resident, and one of 30 who got arrested on Wednesday to protest the construction work on the Bakken pipeline in Iowa, despite numerous pending lawsuits in the courts.
Arrests may continue this weekend as protesters, or maybe possibly a better term would be protectors, plan to hold a vigil at the site where the pipeline, if constructed, will cross the Des Moines River in Boone County near Pilot Mound. More details on that later.
Wednesday's arrests occurred as part of a planned action by several groups, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, Bold Iowa, and 100 Grannies for a Livable Future, and their allies. Over 100 people occupied the driveway of Precision Pipeline Truck Yard in Boone, just a few hundred yards from the Farm Progress Show. Precision Pipeline is the company contracted to build the Bakken Pipeline for Dakota Access.
And Greta and I were there on Wednesday and noted more than a few of our Central Iowa neighbors among those who got arrested. They were each released on $300 bail late Wednesday night, and we have four of them with us today, including Mary Sand, whose voice started our show.
Yeah, we might have three of them with us today. And today at 1:30 p.m., the pipeline company and the organizers of Wednesday's action meet in a previously scheduled federal court appearance in Des Moines. Dakota Access is seeking an injunction, essentially a restraining order, against ICCI, Bold Iowa, their lead organizers, and, in the words of ICC organizer Adam Mason, Jane Doe and John Doe, in other words, anyone else wanting to stop the pipeline. An injunction would bring much harsher penalties against protesters than the simple trespassing charges that Wednesday's protesters received.
Pipeline organizers are hoping that the very peaceful, mutually respectful nature of Wednesday's protest will have an impact on the decision of Judge Rebecca Ebinger. Again, that hearing is at 1:30 today in the federal court building in Des Moines.
And Judge Ebinger already ruled against Dakota Access this week when the pipeline company sought a temporary restraining order of the same kind in advance of the protest.
Speaking of law enforcement, Wednesday we saw both the Boone County Sheriff's Department, which would normally be involved in local trespassing issues, and the Iowa State Troopers involved. This was due to an action by Governor Terry Branstad authorizing the Iowa State Troopers to conduct arrests of protesters.
So let's listen to some audio from about 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday. You'll hear a site boss from Precision Pipeline, a protest organizer and KHOI radio personality Ed Fallon of Bold Iowa, and Iowa State Patrolman Randy Kunert, and then two protesters who are holding the line, preparing to be arrested.
This is private property. You'll have to move so our vehicles are allowed to come in and out of here, or the law enforcement will have to get involved.
Well, our intent is to stop construction of the pipeline since our courts have let us down, and our governor has let us down, and the legislature, and the Army Corps of Engineers, everyone has let us down, so we really don't have an option at this point but to physically stop construction ourselves with our bodies.
So again, folks, so we're perfectly clear, from the Boone County side, the State Patrol side, we don't want to arrest anybody, not our intent, okay? But you heard from the Bakken folks, obviously you can't hold up their work.
Pipeline
folks, obviously causing a problem with traffic. So it's my understanding that these folks don't want to move, is that correct?
Their goal is to stop the construction of the pipeline, and that means that today stopping traffic from moving in and out of these sites.
Okay, and they understand that they're trespassing, and if they don't move, they will be arrested
right.
by the officers.
They understand,
is that correct?
They understand that being arrested is a possibility, yes.
Okay. Again, folks, we would encourage you all to leave, move so you don't get arrested. Again, if you choose to not move, You'll be arrested by the Boone County Sheriff's Department with assistance from the Iowa State Patrol.
Nahoma, how do you feel?
Nervous,
but excited, and doing. I know I'm doing the right thing. I'm taking a stand. We're standing in solidarity, and we're making a statement. This is for our children and our waters and our land. So, whoo, good times.
Jan, how do you feel?
Well, I was thinking about when Jesus cleared the money changers out of the temple, and they went back the next day, and probably Bakken will go back to their work the next day, but it's important to make sure we get our soul back, and that we feel solidarity with the land and particularly with the people who are at Standing Rock.
Those were Lahoma Simmons of rural Boone, Iowa, and Jan Flora of Ames, just before being arrested.
And they, I think, were the third and fourth people to be arrested. The first and second people to be arrested, I believe, are in the studio with us now. Taylor Burby, you were number one, and Julia Slocum, were you the second? Yes. Okay, so welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. So yesterday's events started with a workshop on civil disobedience put on by the Iowa CCI at Pilot Mound City Hall. Taylor?
Yeah, it was an emotional day for sure. I knew going to Pilot Mound that I was willing to risk arrest. I have four nephews who live in North Dakota in the way of this pipeline. I'm originally from western North Dakota where this pipeline begins, mm-hmm. and have been doing work on fracking, writing about it in particular, and traveling around the country speaking about the Bakken oil boom for about the past 3 years. This felt like the next logical step that I needed to take, and I didn't know what to expect. It was emotional.
And I'm sure you were also drawing upon some of your experiences when you mentioned western North Dakota, that's the Standing Rock gathering there,
right,
on the Cannonball River, right by the Missouri River in North Dakota.
Yeah, 2 weekends ago I spent some time up at the Spirit Camps, and that was perhaps the most moving experience I have ever experienced, mm-hmm. save the birth of my nephews. To be together with over 2,000 American Indians and to witness generosity and radical hospitality is incredible. And now that gathering is well over 4,000 people.
And so there's protectors in North Dakota who are gathering peacefully.
Yeah. I mean, we need to dispel that rumor that it's dangerous. The state governor and the elected leaders have said it's lawlessness. People are armed and dangerous. The only thing I saw when I was up there were pocket knives and hatchets to cut kindling and, you know, repair anything you might need to build sweat lodges.
Mm-hmm. And many of the spiritual elders are accompanying their chinupa or their sacred pipes. That was distorted into pipe bombs.
That's correct.
There was an editorial I was kind of catching up on with the fact that there are many on horses, as mm-hmm. the Native community is very established in that regard for mm-hmm. mobility still. This
right.
culture has been under genocidal attack, so it seemed like the horses was a big surprise and almost viewed as a threat. How did that ever become an issue that North Dakota was under some sort of threat, and then that was going to spread here to Iowa?
I think we have to be honest that people in power are nervous when large groups of people of color get together, because it reflects back how our governmental structures have not promoted justice of all people, mm-hmm. about how oppressed and repressed groups have been pushed to the margins. These horses that you're speaking about, Pat, are simply used as ceremonial, mm-hmm. you know, a way to really get people excited, mm-hmm. to rally them to the cause, to mm-hmm. show us something beautiful, and that a pipeline spill impacts not only human beings, mm-hmm. but all creatures on mm-hmm. the planet.
And it would seem that they were exercising their cultural norms, if you will. That's how they are as Native people, on their property.
Right.
I mean, there was treaty rights from the Great Treaty of Laramie, 1868.
You can
that
see.
That allowed, that kind of basically addressed their sovereign national mm-hmm. rights as a culture. And then we kind of imposed our own ideas of what is appropriate. And they have their beliefs on what is appropriate. So I guess the courts are going to be evolving towards some resolution of this. I understand maybe September 9th.
So. A week from today.
So these are ongoing issues that I hope the listeners are following this. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's catch up the listeners on exactly what's going on up at Standing Rock with that entity. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe filed a lawsuit on July 27th against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for violating a number of federal laws when the agency issued the final permits for the pipeline. The pipeline is slated to pass through the tribe's ancestral lands, as we mentioned, mm-hmm. passes within a half mile of the reservation. In particular, the Corps' approval of the permit allows the oil company to dig the pipeline under the Missouri River and just upstream of the reservation and the tribe's drinking water supply. And so there's a parallel here between the pipeline going under the Missouri River and the pipeline going under the Des Moines River right nearby us. Mm-hmm. Construction of the pipeline began despite the pending lawsuit, many lawsuits, I should say, and a temporary restraining order by the tribe requesting a halt to construction of the pipeline is what Pat was referring to. A court hearing was held in Washington, D.C., on August 24th, and a decision on this temporary restraining order is expected to be issued before the end of next week. Mm-hmm. So we'll know whether the U.S. Court, District Court of Washington, D.C., is going to stop the construction of the pipeline in order for these lawsuits to proceed and decisions to be made about that.
But that overview of the lawlessness that they were trying to establish up at Standing Rock, that was brought into focus here with the action in central Iowa on Wednesday. There was a workshop that was and a lot of references to the Standing Rock situation of how to be engaged in a nonviolent outreach of our First Amendment rights. So there was a caravan that was organized after the gathering at the Pilot Mound Community Center. We traveled to the Farm Progress parking lot near Boone. And as mentioned, this site is just a few hundred yards from the pipeline company's main yard in central Iowa. A number of speakers at the rally expressed gratitude to the Dakota people for their efforts in North Dakota. And it started off by a blessing by Robert Knoth of Earlham, Iowa. And we were very fortunate to include Robert. He was traveling with his Chinupa. He's a spiritual man of the Lakota Nation. And Iowa followed by Peter Clay. So let's have the audio involving Robert Knoth, a native man from Earlham, Iowa.
I'd like to talk to our relatives. All you standing here and outside here, I want to ask a prayer today for you, all your safety. Take off your hats, please. I'm going to talk in my native language. O Dukashila Wakantaka, Uchosani Awoki, Uchimaka, Mother Earth, we're here for you today. We're here for good health, help, and happiness today. I ask that you bless the police that are watching us. I ask that you bless the protesters. I ask that you bless this Mother Earth. And I ask that you help all of us understand why we're here. My relatives up in North Dakota, they're still standing and praying. And I'm praying along with them today. I brought a loaded pipe. And when this protest is over and everybody goes home, I'm going to smoke that pipe for all of you. And everybody included, the animals, the trees, the fish, the earth.
Yeah.
Because this is what we're here for. It's not about us. We're here to sacrifice something today. And I'm going to pray and give thanks for you.
I just came back from North Dakota, and it was a great privilege to be standing with our indigenous brothers and sisters. Water is life. Our Native American friend Moses Springs Plenty from Kansas City says, there's only one creation that can live without water, and that is the Stone Nation. Every other living being, doesn't matter their nationality, their species, how many legs they have, if they fly, every creature is dependent on water. Future generations will have no future unless we protect the water today. Our precious Des Moines River, the longest free-flowing river in Iowa, more than 500 miles, drains more than a quarter of our state. We are here to protect the sacred waters of the Des Moines River and of the many other rivers and streams gravely threatened by this unwise pipeline. Joining with our indigenous brothers and sisters of Standing Rock, we say, Mini Wachoni, water is life. Protect it.
And you're listening to KHOI. We're discussing the action that occurred on Wednesday of civil disobedience here in central Iowa. We were listening to Peter Clay, and before him was Robert Knoth from the rally day before yesterday on Wednesday, prior to the civil disobedience action in Boone, where 30 protesters got arrested in an attempt to slow progress on the Bakken pipeline and show solidarity with the Standing Rock Nation and their encampment in North Dakota. My name is Pat Schlarbaum, together with my co-host this morning, Greta Anderson, and our esteemed panel of guests, Mary Sand, Taylor Brobery, and Julia Slocum. Yes, sir.
And all of whom were arrested on Wednesday, along with 27 others. And so in Iowa, we have a different sort of legal situation. The Standing Rock Nation has noted violations of law regarding sacred sites, regarding heritage sites, whereas our struggles seem to focus on this issue of eminent domain and land ownership, which is kind of contrary to Native American tradition. So slightly different terminology, and yet it seems to be almost the same thing. Julia Slocum, one of our guests, is a farmer here in central Iowa, in Ames, actually, within the confines of Ames, Lacewing Acres. You don't own your land, but you certainly have a close relationship to it.
Yeah.
And so I would ask you to speak about the issue of land and perhaps bring in the landowner from Calhoun County who yesterday was almost escorted away by law enforcement but ended up not. So.
Oh, she was not arrested.
This is what I read.
Okay.
Ed Fallon posted an update saying that she was not actually arrested.
Okay.
Who we're speaking of? Cindy Coppola.
Okay, in Calhoun County.
In Calhoun County, she was, the construction was going on her land.
That had been seized.
Yes, by eminent domain, and she stood in front, blocked the progress of those earth-moving equipment, and they backed off. So, anyway, that's the latest news on that. But perhaps you can give us some perspective on what that might.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my biggest reasons for feeling so angry about how this process has happened, how Iowa citizens haven't been heard, is that when the company came with their plan to our state, they approached landowners before they had any permits and said, "We're going to take your land. We can give you more money now or less money later." And a lot of people did sell, I would argue, under coercion, and those are called voluntary easements. And the rest of the land is taken by eminent domain. I have such a moral opposition to that being called a voluntary easement. I know a couple of landowners, one being the folks next to my folks' place, who did end up selling.
And where is that located?
Just near Ames. It's an Ames address, but they're in Boone County. And didn't want to sell their land and are heartsick to see the equipment moving onto it and construction beginning and to see all of this opposition happening on all fronts, all these lawsuits, the Iowa Utilities Board being challenged, and seeing the company move as quickly as possible to get as much pipe in the ground as possible.
Right.
They're forcing it.
Well, and construction had begun up in the northern states before Iowa even came with its verdict on
right.
this issue, which certainly had to weigh into the decision, fact that it was already that far.
Absolutely, yeah.
My first conversation with the pipeline company, and this was actually my only conversation, by the way, I did try to reach them twice. On Wednesday and on Thursday, the pipeline spokesperson, Vicky Granada, did not return my calls. But the very first conversation I had with Vicky, 2 years ago, right after the very first article was written, she said, yeah, we've already ordered the pipe.
Yeah.
You know, that just it threw me for a loop, I must say. So you stood there and you were arrested. Actually, we have the audio from that.
Oh gosh!
Hey, you are being placed under arrest. You understand that? Okay. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to have an attorney. I'd like to have that attorney present during any questioning if you wish. Can't afford to hire an attorney. I'm sure they will appoint one. You have any questions about that? You understand? Okay. Are you injured in any way? Yep. Let me loosen it. Let me take it off.
Okay, that was Julia Slocum being arrested by a Boone County sheriff from the sheriff department. And Julia's here with us today. And bring back some memories for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been pretty emotional. It was really emotional leading up to it. And I've told several mm-hmm. people that I felt like once the blockade started, I felt like three allergy pills had settled in, and it all just became kind of surreal.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I have been thinking about, too, is Taylor talks about feeling relief, just like a kind of overwhelming feeling of relief when you're standing up there and they're, like, putting the handcuffs on.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt that, too. I think that I have been angry about this for so long, and being surrounded by all of these people who were so supportive and knowing that you were in every way you could taking a stand against it felt like so reassuring to know that you were. I felt for the first time that I wasn't acting out of anger, I was acting out of affection. Because I love this place.
Well, I'd like to point out that when we, in a teaching from the Yankton Nation, when we follow our hearts to those type of moments of being current in the moment, that there's expressions of knowing that justice, this was for your work. I mean, you work with the earth of Iowa every day. So you were kind of working with those earthworms in that moment, I think, is one way of looking at it. You know, is one way.
You know, just to comment on the law enforcement side of things, mm-hmm. you know, they played a role in this event. And, you know, I kind of heard the deputy being respectful and courteous to you. You know, are you injured in any way? Mm-hmm. Oh, let me loosen the handcuffs for you. And I was curious to know what the experience was like during those 8 hours of custody at the Boone County mm-hmm. jail where you ended up and, you know, in the squad car on the way over.
Do you want to speak to
sure.
that?
Sure. Sure, I can speak.
Yeah, Mary Sands.
Yeah.
Please welcome.
Well, just
talking about the police, they were very kind to us. They really were. I walked with a cane. It was on uneven ground, and I was scared to death I was going to fall if I had to have my hands behind my back and I couldn't have my cane. And I explained that to the officer. Actually, it was a state patrol, and he tied my hands in front and helped me into the back of the van. So that was very nice of them, very, very nice of them. They were very respectful the entire time that we were in jail.
If you could describe that scene for us, please, Mary. What was your arrival like there at the Boone County Jail?
Well, we were put in rooms with other people, and the men and the women were separated. We had seven in our little room. I don't know. I think there might have been at least four rooms of folks. Yeah, and they had to take some people upstairs. They had so many. They were not used to this. It took a long, long time to process. I didn't get out of there till after midnight with my daughter-in-law, who was also arrested with me. And there were many others yet to be processed, at least six more, at least that many.
Well, Mary, as the leader of the local Amnesty International chapter, you frequently write letters on behalf of political prisoners in other countries. So your experience must have caused you to reflect on those issues quite a lot.
Very much. Mm-hmm. All day Tuesday, this is the day before the event, I was just feeling kind of numb because I knew what I was going to decide to do. I didn't want to do it. I was very angry, disappointed, upset, frustrated that the whole process had gotten to this point, that we had not been able to stop this. The pipes in the ground, they're digging up ground, they're clearing natural areas, cutting down trees, and it just seems like such an obvious thing that this is a bad thing for Iowa.
And I also heard you saying that the process of this decision-making, on the one hand, you might compare our country, you know, the United States, to other countries in terms of the generous allowances that the First Amendment gives us, and the fact that you weren't abused while you were in jail by law enforcement, although maybe that might not have happened if we were a different race. But on the one hand, we have this wonderful paragon of democracy. On the other, we have a process that seems to have cut the people out of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Julia.
I just want to say I thank you so much for speaking of race. I don't want to distract from the conversation of the pipeline itself, but I think that has been the biggest takeaway from me throughout this process was, like, from the moment we formed the blockade, thinking about whiteness and what it meant to be a young white woman being arrested and how that would be different for other people in our community. I'm really thankful that you said that. I feel like it's really important to acknowledge, and someday I would really like to talk more about that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there is the example of North Dakota and the people up there, the lawlessness tag being placed on them with such casualness.
Yeah, in almost a slanderous manner. They really had no evidence of any lawlessness. It was all very peaceful. They pray every morning. Taylor, you're nodding. Is there something you'd like to?
Well, I think just, you know, having spent so much time in North Dakota, in western North Dakota, and going to many sacred sites outside of the spirit camp where destruction is happening, it's just been so moving to see people who now, as of yesterday, have been holding vigil at these spirit camps for 5 months, and this is very primitive, we need to acknowledge. For us, again, what a gift to be able to go out for a day of action, and up there we are literally talking about months of action, of peaceful prayer, of generosity being brought to these camps, of people setting up teepees, of living in tents, of surviving out in the elements. You know, the director of Homeland Security has removed their access to water, to hand sanitation. to state-owned ambulances. These are now all being brought in either through the generosity of individuals or the tribal nation itself. Tensions are escalating,
and
you know.
I'm getting the impression it's a growing enterprise. As many as 90 native cultures are now organizing together. You're not hearing about this on CNN.
No. I think for me, this has really been my home is coming home again. I moved to Ames to get away from the Bakken oil boom, where I go each summer to live and write, to observe these changes. And a week after I moved here, this pipeline was announced.
Oh, my goodness.
And so to watch this event, which now statistically the Spirit Camp is like the 20th largest city in North Dakota, it's incredible. And just a week and a half ago when I was there to see 25 tribes arrive and to be present, and now to witness over 90 sovereign nations pledge the resistance to this. It is a model to me of what we can be thinking about in Iowa. Mm-hmm. Because though this pipeline might cross through Cindy Coppola's individual farm, it impacts all farmers. And what I witnessed when the Puyallup tribe from Washington came out and asked them, why are you here? This pipeline does not cross your land. They said, but eventually we will need our brothers and sisters to stand up for us. And I think this is such a model for other farmers in Iowa that it's easy to feel alone. But I think the three of us and our 27 partners who risked arrest are hoping to be a visible model of it does not impact any land I own, but it impacts friends and family, and I am there as a representative of those people, and just want to say to farmers that if you're feeling alone, you are most definitely not alone. We are in this together with you.
Well, that kind of brings us to where I wanted to be at the end of our segment, talking about relationship and the relationships that you have grown and gained through the work that you've done. Could you talk about that? We have two young people in the room and someone who's more of mine and Pat's generation, Mary Sand. Yeah. So this effort has really crossed a lot of boundaries in terms of who's involved, it seems.
Yeah, in the studio this morning, we're discussing the Bakken pipeline as it diagonals across the state. And please go ahead, Julia.
Sure. Well, in the cell that I was in, I was with five other women, and two of them were with 100 Grannies for a Livable Future.
Oh, from Iowa City.
And they were two of the most inspiring people. One of them is in her mid-70s and walked across the country for climate change action. It took 8 months, and she said that that experience radicalized her thinking about environmental justice. I don't know, just... I mean, you're sitting in this cell for 6 hours, and we kind of took turns, and people shared what brought them to this movement, why they're so passionate about it. And I just like hearing those stories, you know, a few of them are mothers, a couple of them are not. And one of them had just been reading some articles in the newspaper in Iowa City and wrote a letter to the editor and started getting frustrated, like, I need to actually do something. And so she drove over here and joined us. Mm-hmm. But she was relatively new to this whole, story that's unfolding. And I don't know, just like hearing the different ways that people were drawn to the movement was really powerful and so bonding to, like, be in this really stressful situation with each other. And I don't think that I have laughed that hard in a really long time. I think there's something about, like, being in close quarters in a really emotional situation that, like...
When your heart is experiencing those knowings, then laughter will really solidify those. And also raising your body temperature. You do a sweat lodge and you change your thinking. And if you end up in a jail cell and... Boone, Iowa. It sounds like that laughter can, it's a very dire structured drama that you're approaching. But so tell us about that laughter. How did that Did it go from individual to individual?
Yeah, well, I think we had a bit of a comedian in our group who saw the humor in a lot of things that were happening. I think it also helped that one of the women, Lahoma, is from Boone and knew some of the officers, so it brought a comfort level to our cell that I don't know that other people maybe experienced. Mm-hmm. I was going to say something, and I...
Well, we'll get back to it. Hold that thought. Well, Mary, how was your experience then?
Well, I told my group that every group needs a whiner, complainer, and I got dibs on that role. But you're right, Julie. There was lots of laughing and lots of discussion, and it just went from one to the next. Laughing, discussion, and that's how we kept ourselves going throughout the day and throughout the night.
And I do remember what I was going to say. Miriam, one of the 100 grannies, at one point said that she shared a quote that she loves: that action is the antidote to despair. And because we were just talking about how much of a relief it was to feel like we were doing something.
Well, what the byword for a whole institutional change that people want to engage. Go ahead with that again.
Action is the antidote to despair.
Mm-hmm. And Taylor, I asked you to bring possibly something to read from your book, Fracture, which you've edited a collection of writings by other folks.
Yeah, this is the country's first anthology of creative writing on the topic. There are over 50 authors in this, representing 26 states. So I thought I would read Alison Hawthorne Deming's poem. It's called Homeland Security. And Alison, if you're curious, is related to that Hawthorne. Nathaniel Hawthorne was her great-grandfather. So Homeland Security by Alison Hawthorne Deming. This will give you a bit of a global perspective on why we're in this together. What is the day? What is a day to the astronaut floating 200 miles above Earth, the space station whirling 15 times a day around the globe's circumference, while he drifts weightless, as if unmoving, sipping meals from a plastic pouch? Is that how it works, keeping everything contained against the drift? His twin is down there donating biometrics to the database. What is a year to them, to their bones and hearts and brains? That's what the instruments want to know, or what we've taught them to want. Did I mention that the space twin, too, is donating his stats? He'll pay the higher price for his unearthly habitation. Bodies need gravity or some system that simulates the magnetic pole of mantle and core. He can see home from a small window in space, the planet from out there, sublime, a blue and white ball, so tender, it might be made of glass, just forming at the tip of the glass blower's rod. The Earth twin watched his brother lift off from the Cosmodrome, 0 to 17,012 minutes. It feels like the hand of God has come down and grabbed you by the collar and ripped you off the planet. You're either going to float in space or you're going to be dead. What is Earth to the astronaut? It is the exception to emptiness. Sure, other planets lie further out in the black concealment of space. Best, perhaps, that we do not know their voraciousness and need. Ours, we know, is troubled by privileged greed, yet still in its heyday of its experiment with life. What is an atmosphere, and how did Earth get one? Thanks, cyanobacteria, for your evolutionary gift, the great oxygenation event that made us possible. I'm writing this to find my way into the fray over fracking, wild card as it seems now that I've gone so far out into space. But no one wants to hear again about flaming water faucets, exploited towns and farms, heartland riddled with quakes, water poisoned and stuck back in the ground to find its way home. Space might be the only way to see what kind of sky we need and how the great carbonation event might be flipping the way Earth does or doesn't do life. We say blue marble. We say Mother Earth. we say home. The astronaut says, beautiful. Earth from space says, keep me. Homeland security means leave it in the ground, lock it up with soldiers standing guard, cover it with grassland and trees.
And that's Taylor Broby from his book, Fractured.
He's reading a poem by
Alison Hawthorne Deming.
Yes, Taylor edited that book. That's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Julia Slocum, Taylor Broby, and Mary Sand.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're back with Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, and in the studio is Susan Guiazda, our regular guest from the City of Ames Public Relations Office.
Good morning.
Good morning, Susan, and we have Rudy the Road Guy, Rudy Kester from Public Works. So, Susan, what do you have for us today?
Well, I think we should start right with Rudy because streets and construction is a hot topic right now, and we have a big, big street closing coming up. So I will let Rudy talk about that.
Thanks, Susan. So 13th Street, we will be closing it here coming up on September 6th.
13th Street, that is a main artery, east-west artery in Ames.
It is.
Did
one
you,
of the
did
few
you not
we
know
have.
That?
Yeah, oh, I'm totally aware of this, yes.
So where exactly is this closure?
So we're right adjacent to the Furman Aquatic Center, basically where the railroad tracks to Furman's entrance is where our closure is going to be. Yep.
Okay, so the Aquatic Center closes after Labor Day.
It closes on the 5th, yep. And so we'll be closing the street the following day. So
wow.
We trying to minimize all of our impacts there, as well as just accommodate the previous projects we had that had closures earlier this summer. So we're not completed with road construction yet. No,
right.
We're not.
But we are back on track with 6th Street. So that would be one of the ways people can get across.
Yep. 6th Street is open, and the new bridge looks fabulous. So that is an alternate route that folks can take, as well as many others, to the north, 24th Street, Bloomington Road as well. We're definitely encouraging some of our high school traffic to utilize 13th Street and the Furman Aquatic Center parking area for a satellite drop-off or parking location.
Excellent idea. Yes, they mm-hmm. could just take that nice hike.
Exactly.
And we're there to incentivize them. Rudy and I will be there Tuesday morning along with some other city staff to hand out granola bars and encourage students to enjoy the morning hike. And if parents want a low-stress, no-hassle place to drop their high school student off, come to the Furman Aquatic Center. For as long as 13th Street is closed, that will be an option.
Okay, so people coming in from the west or coming in from the east are going to be able to get to the Furman Center?
West only.
West only, yep. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
There's a lot of folks coming from that area.
Yeah, and our duration of the closure looks to be 21 days is what we're shooting for. So, and we will make that, if not earlier, is my fingers crossed. So
okay. So what is the purpose of all this? Can I ask?
It's basically the street improvement. We've been working on there the last 2 months now on the north kind of half of the road, or north quarter, I'll call it. So the north westbound lane, as well as a retaining wall we constructed there. That took a really long time, just due to the complexity of it and the size of that. So we have had completed that. We've swapped to the south side now, and we actually have the south lane removed. We're working on that and getting that prepared. So when we actually do our closure, we're going to be paving that south lane, and then we'll be under full closure, so we can pull out the center two lanes and pave those as well. So basically to complete the paving process of the street improvement.
Well, that's complex. That's sort of logistical. That's a big part of your job, I guess.
Well, another really important amenity that they're offering is they're shaving the road down to improve sight distance. You might recall trying to get out of some of those streets that empty into 13th Street was difficult because you could not see to the east.
Yep, we're definitely dropping that, taking out that vertical curb to help with that line of sight. Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
So the road is actually quite a bit lower.
Yes, if you drive through there, you can see that.
Okay, well, this is so a September-only project.
Yes.
Okay.
We're looking to complete this by the end of the month and be back open to traffic.
Okay, well, and Monday, you're going to,
Tuesday. So Labor Day will be Monday.
Oh, that's of course, Monday is Labor Day, Tuesday.
And so that whole week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, city staff and any other volunteers that want to join us will join Ames High School leaders, student leaders, and we'll be out at Furman Aquatic Center welcoming our remote parkers. We call it the Remote Parking Party Crew. And we'll be out there handing out breakfast, fresh fruit, granola bars, just things that kids need to get their breakfast and their energy for the day, and really thanking them for helping divert traffic off the streets. If just a few people come, we know that there are that fewer cars out there. It's crowded right now in the morning. The streets are pretty full. So anything we can do to get people off the streets, encourage them to carpool, take alternate forms of transportation, or to use the remote parking, we really are trying to encourage them to do so.
Great. What else do you have for us in terms of road closures? Anything?
Yes, I have another street that will be beginning here construction on the week of September 12th, Clark Avenue between Lincoln Way and Main Street. We'll be starting on that with a closure and taking out the pavement and reconstructing that one. So.
And but will folks still be able to get across Main Street at that?
Yes, Main Street and Clark, the intersection will be open. We'll be just south of that intersection. So from the basically, Highway Drugstore South will have.
United Way.
Yep. Basically, through traffic will not be allowed through there. But we'll be doing it in half, so the north half of the railroad tracks and the south half of the railroad tracks. But through the duration of it, no through traffic.
Gotcha. Okay. Is that it? Is that going to keep you busy for the month of September, Rudy?
Those two will, along with some other projects that we're wrapping up and continuing to work on. The Wellens area, as we're calling it, that's Wellens Drive, Wellens Circle, Dotson Drive, Beetle Drive, Bauman, Applin Road, Jeffrey Lane, Harris
South
Street.
South of the West IV.
Yes, it'd be west and south of that of the West IV out there. Mm-hmm. Yep. So not a major corridor as 13th, but definitely impacts the residents and the local traffic through there as well. So a project that we're progressing through and will be through the next few weeks on that. So in another location, North 2nd Street, just north of Lincoln Way, will be progressing into another phase of that project as well. So North 2nd Street, it'd be between North Hazel and North Maple. So
okay.
Block there.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Rudy, for this update, and thanks for all your hard work and mental gymnastics as you figure it out.
We try to keep him busy. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a few things I just want to get on people's calendars. I know it seems like a ways away, but we've gotten calls on trick-or-treating. When is trick-or-treating in Ames? Well, that will be Monday, October 31st, which is Halloween. We recommend people trick-or-treat from 5:30 to 7:30. And, it gets dark pretty early when you get into those October months. So it's pretty much dark by 5:30. So we encourage people to use caution. And remember that Monday, October 31st, is trick-or-treat night in Ames.
Okay. We're actually celebrating the holiday on the holiday.
Yes, we are. Some other things coming up in September. You're probably aware that Ames has a sister city in Japan, Kyushu City, and we have an active exchange going on where we send Ames residents to Japan, and Japan says sends Japanese residents to us. We sent a middle school delegation to Japan this summer. And we will be receiving a very large Japanese delegation of middle school students on September 18th. So we'll have 25 middle school students along with about 5 chaperones and translators. And then they will spend the week of September 18th. That's a Sunday, so the rest of the week they'll be in Ames. So you might see this group. They'll probably be hard to miss with so many children. It was a very competitive program in Japan to come to America to visit Ames. So we're very excited to meet these children and welcome them to Ames and sort of show them what life is like for a typical teenager in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Some other things coming up. Hard to believe, September 13th is the 40th anniversary of SciRide.
SciRide.
Yeah. SciRide started out years and years ago, 1976. It's sort of a dial ride service. It took a while to get fixed routes. It was small and kind of fledgling. And look at what it's become. It's just huge now.
And it's a gem of Ames.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's really good. It's, a jointly funded initiative. SciRide is funded by the City of Ames, by Iowa State University students, and by Iowa State University Administration. So it has 3 funding streams. It continues to grow. We're getting new bendy buses, if you've ever seen the articulated buses. Some more bendy buses are coming. Those were purchased through a federal grant and some matching funds. 6 new articulated buses will be here.
Okay, so an articulated bus is a bendy bus.
Is a bendy bus. And, you know, I don't know, Rudy, have you ever driven one of those?
I have not.
Boy, they just look like they'd be challenging. Yeah. And and SciRide is looking for drivers.
Okay. So are we having a birthday party on September 13th?
We are going to do some type of recognition. It has not been completely fleshed out yet, but absolutely, we'll be doing some kind of recognition of that 40th anniversary of SciRide because it is a major event, and we're very excited by it. Some other recognition events, just the very next day, that's Tuesday, September 13th, is SciRide. Wednesday, September 14th, we are going to celebrate the opening of the new sand volleyball courts in Inez Grove Park. So that has been a project that's sort of been a long time coming. Sand volleyball is becoming amazingly popular. It's popular in women's leagues, men's leagues, and co-ed leagues. It's kind of a sport you can do for a long time. And we get a lot of different ages that participate in it, and we ran out of space to play it. So Inez Grove, we have some new sand volleyball courts with lights, and it's important because we need to schedule them at night, and it's just a fun activity. I know Rudy plays. Mm-hmm. I've played some sand volleyball as well. It's really a workout.
Yes, it is.
I can imagine.
It's sand. It's hard. It's hard to run on that sand. So we're excited by that. We also have a series of recognition events throughout the fall that will direct people to our website, cityofames.org. We have Northridge Heights Park. We have Duff Avenue Park. We have Greenbrier Park. All these new parks, they're existing parks, but they've had new amenities added, new playgrounds, new shelters, new landscaping. So we'll be doing recognition events, and I hope your listeners will look to our website for that information.
Well, thank you so much, Susan Guiazda. It's always a pleasure to have you come in the first Friday of the month.
It's great to be here.
And Rudy, the road guy, Rudy Kastor, thanks a lot.
Thanks
for
a lot.
Coming in, too.
Yeah, thanks for your service to the Ames community.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Our 3 guests from the first segment were Mary Sand, Taylor Burby, and Julia Slocum. All were arrested on Wednesday for blocking the driveway to the Precision Pipeline truck yard in Boone, preventing construction trucks from coming and going. Once again, a protection vigil or encampment is planned for this weekend at the Des Moines River near Pilot Mound and will continue indefinitely. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you'll also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Other music you heard was Widespread Panic.
Mm-hmm. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again.
On the radio.
On the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.